September 1997, 9:07 p.m. Okay, keep an eye on the chronometer. Okay, let's get down to business as we do not know how long this tape is. My guesstimate is probably 30 minutes per side.
Good guess.
Okay, let's act accordingly. And let me give a brief dissertation on moral behavioral patterns of raising of offspring and the importance to instill at an early age particular patterns that will be formed throughout the child's life. But I will preface by saying that I feel that a positive enforced morals are a good thing for the upbringing of a child. The importance of morals will be made self-evident as I proceed in my eloquent communique. Morals and offspring. The importance of morals in the development at an early age, even from the stage of infancy, is very important. Simple vocal commands as no, don't, naughty, wrong, are used at an early age to correct a child's behavior. If it is set in such a way, it is forced into the child that the word no, said in that particular way, will have a positive response command from the child that the child will stop doing what is wrong. Now, as a child grows, those morals that are instilled, do not lie, do not disobey your parents unless it is a wrong decision, do not cheat, do not steal, do not hurt. These morals are all important because with these simple five morals, do not lie, do not go against your parents, do not cheat, do not steal, do not hurt. They are all very functional in forming a good individual. Let's look at, first of all, do not lie. Well, this is a difficult one. And the reason why it's number one is that it needs some clarification. Sometimes it is necessary to bend the truth to protect an individual. And this should be enforced as do not lie to a child. At an early age, the child later on will figure out that there are certain times when it is appropriate to bend the truth, to lie in essence. And these situations that a child will come across will be developed through experience. Do not go against your parents unless what they tell you to do is wrong. Parents are very important to a child, and by enforcing do not go against your parents, you can set it in the rest of the morals. Do not cheat. Cheating is bad because you do not achieve your full potential if you cheat. If you can get away with something, let us say cheating on a test, copying from a friend, you are not learning. You are not advancing, and you're not doing things on your own. Certain individuals in your history, on your planet, have succeeded wonderfully by disobeying, do not cheat. But in later life, looking at them, you can see that they were not very good people, and they had massive other problems. Do not steal. This is self-explanatory. Because it will cause animosity and problems if you steal. Do not hurt. If you hurt somebody, they hurt you back. And this leads to all sorts of problems. Okay, here endeth my brief dissertation on moral behaviors of raising of offspring. Any questions?
Yes. I assume... Excuse me for a second. That's better. I assume these are the same morals that you grew up with.
Yes.
Ah. And they've served you well ever since.
I would assume so. I have added many to them.
Mm. Okay. Now, do you see any difference between other people who have been raised in the sixth dimension as opposed to your being raised in the third, as far as these morals go?
These five that I selected, there are more, seem to be a standard that all beings of a third and sixth dimensions appear to have. They are the basic ones. The ones that have been instilled in my cubs, in the cubs in the crash, and other crashes.
Okay. Now, what happens, though, when a child sees his parents doing the exact opposite?
The parents should not.
I agree with that. But it's not always a factor that enters into it.
Yes, it is. It is very important to understand. When a child is around, you have to behave with those five morals. If you have to hurt somebody with your child present, you explain to your child why you did that.
Okay, what about, for example, with, let's take a little thing like Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
I was lied about Santa Claus for some 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And never thought the worst of it after I learned differently. But yet I did learn that, it is okay to lie.
That's not a lie. That's a fairy tale. Big difference. It is a make-believe character for children.
But I would be told that's not the truth. There is no such thing as Santa Claus. And I have my mom says, of course there is.
And if you ask your mother, there it is. Santa Claus, St. Nicholas, as far as I know, really did exist. There was a Santa Claus. And in your religion, does a person, when they become a saint or go to the period of waiting or heaven, for want of a better name, do they cease to exist? I don't think so. So therefore, Santa Claus does still exist. And in the mass consciousness of the mind, the group conscious, he does exist.
Well, let's bring it up to bring up a point.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes the truth is not always as beneficial as would be a fib.
Well, that goes into distorting or changing the truth.
So you have to explain to your child why you did so, I assume.
And that goes into later on in life.
Yeah.
My girls do not believe in any Santa Claus, St. Nicholas, or Father Christmas.
But now, do you lie to your cubs?
If I have something... if they ask me a question and I cannot... answer it without lying. I do not answer. I will say we will address that at a later time.
Okay. Good. Well, that's a good answer.
And nowadays, I can get away with it with just a look.
All right.
Or if it is something that I am not equipped to answer without lying, and I know either Kiri or Mark is, I will say, go and ask Kiri, or go and ask Mark.
I guess the real problem is when they come into Leonides.
Yes, Leonides. Next question, because we are limited on time.
That's it.
Okay.
Greetings, Russ.
Greetings, Mark.
Okay, as we are limited on time, let us get down to business as quickly as possible.
Excellent.
Okay, Tia's dissertation and answers, and there is very little to change there, except for maybe a little bit of wording on the explanation of lying concerning Santa Claus, St. Nicholas, and Father Christmas. Tia is not aware that St. Nicholas and Santa Claus are the same person. Well, yes, she is. However, Father Christmas is a totally different person. They are two distinct different individuals that serve the same function. Father Christmas is a British deity that has been changed for the Christmas holiday. He is a Celtic deity.
Very succinct.
Or was. That needs to be explained.
Okay.
But he does serve the same function as St. Nicholas and Santa Claus.
Okay.
There are other deities that serve the same sort of function. There is a deity that does the same sort of function at Diwali, a Hindu festival.
Okay.
So the giving of gifts is something that is through most major religions. And they have a deity or an individual that is responsible for giving up those gifts. Okay, now let us move along to my dissertation. And dealing and addressing evolutionary history and the consciousness of the development of the mind in relationship to the evolutionary history of a race. Now, this could apply to any race, anywhere, that goes through the same set circumstances. You have a race that comes in exile with other races that are genetically similar, yet different enough to have a variation. They arrive on a world. They become isolated after a time. Up until the isolation, there is little difference between them and other space-faring races. Now, the question that should be asked and addressed is, why would a group of individuals wish to come to another planet? Well, there are many possible avenues to explore in this explanation. They come for freedom of speech, freedom of expression, for a new chance, as prisoners. These are just four examples of possible reasons why individuals would move to a new location. A fresh start. That is number five. Up until the point of isolation, there is very little difference, as I have stated, between them and the evolution that is going on other systems. Worlds or sister continents or countries or areas. Now, once the isolation sets in, variations start to occur from the sister worlds. First of all, linguistics changes because there is no longer contact with the group that is connected with externally. But the evolution that happens in the language is a key to a specific nature of the world. Environment plays tremendously in the development of linguistics. For example, the British famous trait about talking about the weather. Well, they have a country that is a very varied variety of weather. From rain, cold, snow, hot, windy, foggy, cloudy, humid. All of these things. Very varied. And in a small area as well. So the topic of discussion normally is interacted with the environmental factors. We will address environmental factors in the change in linguistics later on. We are at present setting up for future discussion. Now, The second occurrence in the isolation is moral behavior, which again is created by the climate of the area. On a world where it is cold and only a few warm days, it becomes necessary to wear clothing. And when you move to a world where it is hotter, until the isolation occurs, clothing is part of the system. It becomes a taboo after a while not to be clothed. When the isolation comes and there are no longer visitors, then it becomes a little lax and clothing becomes optional. Again, we will address this at a later time. What? No laugh?
Not yet. I'm taking it all in.
You missed the humour in that. When we're talking about clothing optional, and we will address this later. 3 is interaction with ethnic and racial different groups. Because the external source is taken away, interaction is forced into groups that had a self-inflicted apartheid. They interact. They start to grow together and blend and melt. So in doing so, they change. This third event affects the previous two also. 4th and finally, for the topic of discussion at a later date, survival and necessity and wealth within a community. When I talk about wealth, I'm not referring to fiscal wealth. I'm talking about spiritual wealth and knowledge. Because external sources are taken away. The learning process from external sources is no longer there. So they have to search internally for the advancement in education and progression that is necessary for a humanoid species. Okay, any questions?
Yeah, this folks who are actually visiting, searching for one or many different reasons to do so, it sounds similar to our pilgrims that we're so used to, mm-hmm. our early American history, who came here looking for freedoms.
Yes.
So, in many ways, you could compare the two groups.
Yes, you could. But let us address pilgrims.
Okay.
That is an accurate description. Pilgrims suggest going to a religious site.
Right.
So to say your early pilgrims, your early people searching for a religious site, that is inaccurate. That needs to be addressed, changed, and corrected.
More like settlers.
Correct. Founding fathers, founding parents, early settlers. These are all correct as opposed to pilgrims.
Well, it's just history we're quoting. Or I'm quoting.
But history is inaccurate in using that phrasing.
I agree. Okay, now how close is the genetic match between the visitors and the indigenous people that they're coming across? That we're speaking of.
The indigenous people are settlers.
Then who are the visitors?
The visitors are people that come to the area from sister worlds. They are the same race in essence, just from different worlds.
Right.
For example, the Syrians coming to Earth to form Atlantis and Lemuria. They are the same.
Right.
So therefore there is no difference.
But what about later? Let's say in the time of our early settlers.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a clear history of those visitations taking place then, or if we do, they're well hidden.
Explain your early settlers. I'm not quite sure what you mean. Are you referring to on your current continent or on your planet?
On a current continent. Visitors from sister worlds, I think, would be the most appropriate term.
Correct. There are references. They are described as angels, demons, and so on. Bright entities.
Okay, so we might, if with a little research, be able to find possible clues to their arrival here.
Correct.
And what they might have left behind.
Correct.
Excellent.
If you look in your religious texts, visions that lots of people saw, it is possible that those are extraterrestrial visitations.
Okay. And I'm sure that because the early settlers here on our continent were getting to know our indigenous species that was here, mm-hmm. the American Indians or Native Americans, then it was only a very minor part of our continent that was being settled.
Correct.
It's more likely that the Native Americans, who took up 80% more of our continent at the time, would have had more contact with those same visitors from sister worlds.
Correct.
Ah. And there we can find probably many references if we were to delve even further.
Correct. Okay, last question.
All right. Is the mission of the visitors from the sister worlds to the visitors who we now come across changed any?
Yes. It is more scientific because it is an inhabited planet. When the Syrians first came, it was a very sparsely inhabited world with humanoid-type beings that were in a primitive state. And primitive, I'm talking about Neanderthal, pre-Neanderthal. So that it was already ongoing. When Atlantis occurred, there were little pockets here and there of a few hundred individuals in various locations that were survivors from Lemuria. So, by looking at this, at a sparsely populated world, there is ample room for habitation of an external group of individuals.
I see.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Live long, prosper, and I will be back.
Hi. Hi to you. Comfortable?
Uh-huh. Okay. Interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hello.
Hi, Karen.
How's it going? We're getting close to 10 number 8 TSS.
Yeah, 5 more minutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, with these 5 minutes, let us look at no, we can't discuss that at this time. Because it's not, it would be too time consuming.
Oh.
Okay?
Okay.
Okay, now let's look at something of interest and topics that we have covered in previous channel sessions. And that is the rules of cleanliness, using speech therapy to heal a psychological problem, and quantum healing. Okay, now let's put all of these together in a single explanation. Okay. Cleanliness is very important, and it involves what?
A awareness of the fact that you need to be clean.
That's a fair step. But I'm talking about, what do you need?
Is it knowledge?
No. Remember a while back we went over, you need clean
fingernail.
Mm-hmm. And?
Clean mind.
Clean hand.
Hands.
Clean mind.
Clean environment to work in.
Mm-hmm.
Clean tools.
Mm-hmm.
And clean outer garments.
Correct. Now, all of these things give you an air of authority in the fact that you are clean, coupled with the self-confidence in yourself of being able to do what you have set yourself to do. Now, if you are nice and clean, working in a clean environment, and you have a patient that has a psychological problem, you immediately give yourself the air that you can help just by being clean in a clean environment with a clean mind, with clean tools and clean fingers and clean fingernails. All of these things tell a lot about something. When dealing with a psychological problem, they will give you more of an opening because the person will look at you and see that you are clean. You are healthy. You can help them. So when you are addressing their mental problems with your clean fingernails and your clean fingers and your clean mind and your clean clothing and your clean environment and your clean tools, you have immediately started to heal on the quantum level. On a microscopic level, you have affected them and how their mind starts to react. And in doing so, you have put them on the road to recovery. You have given them a glimpse of where they can go. Now, what happens from there is very important in how you proceed. Before I deal with any patient that is conscious, I talk to them. I tell them where I want to go, what I'm planning to do, how I'm planning to help, and how they should be when we are finished. This is important because, again, on a quantum level, you are setting in place goals, objectives, and expectations. All very important. And if the individual knows what the goals, expectations are, then you can start the healing. And in doing so, you have to install another factor, belief. Belief that they can be healed. Because if an individual does not believe that they can be healed, then it is a lot of hard work that you have ahead of you. So they have to believe that you can heal. If they are used to a ritualized experience, and ritual is important in every medical procedure. You'll be surprised. Even today. You don't believe me that even today ritual is used in your hospitals?
I do.
Okay. Tell me how you think ritual is used.
Well, for example, whenever I go to an emergency room,
mm-hmm.
first thing I do is have to fill out the papers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get admitted to a waiting room.
Mm-hmm.
And then guaranteed a minimum of half hour will be spent in that waiting room before the doctor finally gets in to see me, or a nurse take my temperature, do some preliminary work, before the doctor gets there.
Mm-hmm.
Unless that was emergency and on my deathbed.
Correct. Even then, there is a ritual.
Right, but guaranteed there is a set routine that they will go through
mm-hmm.
before you even get treated.
So, as a healer, what must you do?
Adhere to a similar sort of procedure as far as preparation.
Correct. But the waiting in itself has an important key. And I really shouldn't leap like a sieve when I'm doing dissertation. It takes all the fun out of it. But, yeah, you have to modify for the environment that you are in. Let us say you are dealing with a Native American. You have to be knowledgeable on their religious practices and their healing practices and how you plan to help. If you're dealing with a white American male, you have to know how they believe that they can be healed. And belief is very, very important. Without belief in yourself, they believing that you can heal them, there is not that much that you can do. Because without belief, the body does not cooperate. When you go to a doctor to be healed, you believe that he can heal you. And in doing so, you are on the first road to recovery. And when you are doing the healing, you have to give that air of confidence with your
wellness.
Correct. Now, why are we pounding this into you?
Because it makes it more of a habit to fall into.
Correct. Okay, now, you have your patient, and you've gone through the preliminaries. You have talked to them. You have found out what they think is wrong with them. You have taken their pulse, taken their heartbeat, and checked their temperature. You have started the healing process. If you just walk in and sit down and say, okay, I'm going to heal you using this knife, this pharmaceutical, and these pieces of cloth, then they're going to look at you and go, are you a doctor? Do you know what you're doing? But if you come in, sit down and talk to them, and go through the ritual, they know that you are a doctor, that you are able to help them. Let us scratch the word doctor and say healer, because doctor in your planet.
Very male term.
Partly. It is also to do with official documentation. So, we have the setup. We have our
clean hands, clean fingernails, clean clothes, clean environment, clean tools, and clean mind.
Correct. But we always start with clean fingernails because they're the very tips. Okay?
Okay.
So, we got our patient, and the patient is ready. We've gone through the rituals. We've gone through taking their pulse, taking their temperature, taking their heartbeat, and talking to them and finding out what led up to the illness, what happened before the accident, what happened before they felt the way that they did. We have deduced that it is fill-in-the-blank's ailment. Now, we have to act in a way that gives them confidence that we can heal them. This confidence is part of the belief process. Whether they believe in some higher deity, the healer, or something else, you have to interact in that way. If they believe in some deity,
then you have to interact within the expected rules. If you're acting as a healer, you have to act within the prescribed patterns that a healer interacts in, or the same as in others. Now that we have the setup, we have deduced that the patient suffers from fill in the blanks ailment. We have got their confidence. They believe that we can heal them. Where do we go now? We start the healing process.
Right.
And in doing so, we have to, again, interact in the way that they think that the healer does, whether it is a witch doctor, medical physician, or other, psychic healer, whatever. You have to behave in those patterns. Any questions?
Now that you've got all that, part of the ritual that you have to go through is actually, you know, helping the patient feel more at ease. Because you're actually making the patient heal himself, or you're helping the patient heal himself.
Yes, we did cover that.
Right. So, wouldn't some of the ritual that you're going through make the patient actually more nervous?
Yes. Yes, it does. But as long as the belief is there, then the healing process continues. Sometimes by a person being nervous, heart rate goes up, blood pressure goes up, etc., adrenaline is released. That, in actual fact, can speed up the healing process. And this is important. If the person is petrified, you cannot heal because they are on fear mode. But if they are suffering a little bit from nervousness, it has to stay a little bit of nervousness. You've seen me in healings.
Yeah.
And if the person is nervous, what do I do?
I've never seen a patient nervous with you, though.
Yes, you have.
No.
Carrie.
She was never nervous around you.
She was the first few times. Yes.
She was very wanting to get healed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
not
nervousness.
Well, yeah. Early on that was. Okay. And how did we get her over that nervousness?
I don't remember.
We clowned around a little.
Oh.
For example, okay, we want you to manifest a ball of white light in front of you. Right in front of you, right here. Put your hands on either side and visualize it. Don't grasp the ball too tightly. Come on, you remember that phrase.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so that made it more relaxed.
Yes, because I was clowning around.
Right.
In her mind, she was seeing a ball. And it was a nice small ball. And all of a sudden, I throw out the banana skin and say, don't squeeze it too tightly. It's in the tone of the voice. Very important. Very important. So, we have humor thrown into the equation. Now, normally, spiritual healers do the ritual on their own. There are helpers around that bring things, much like a nurse brings things. The job of the helpers is to watch for any danger signs, not only from the healer, but from the patient. Because as we briefly touched upon fear, fear can do some very unusual things to an individual.
Well, stop the healing process.
Correct. The patient can become violent. And it is the job of the healers or the assistants, rather, to be there to help.
Hmm. Okay.
So, let us recap. Okay, we have quantum healing,